This is Gulf Coast Live. I'm Julie Glenn. 2017 began with Florida learning that the quality of life for children in this state ranks among the lowest in the country. That's according to a report from Florida Kids Count, which analyzes data from all 67 counties. In the second half of our show today, we check in to ask what's changed a half of a year later and a full legislative session later. But first, the 2017 seasonal outlook is being released today from the National Hurricane Center, and there's a new watch and warning system making its public debut this year. Today on the show, we're talking about the need for a storm surge watch and warning system with the National Hurricane Center's storm surge team leader, Jamie Rome, who joins us on the phone. Thanks for your time today.
Well, thank you for having me.
Also in the studio is FGCU's emergency manager, Gerald Campbell, who frequently warns people of the danger that water presents in hurricane situations. Thanks for being here.
Thank you.
We are talking about a new watch and warning system for storm surges from the National Hurricane Center, and we're having a look at the 2017 seasonal outlook. Do you have a question or a comment? Give us a call at 877-428-8255. That's 877-GCU-TALK. On Facebook, we're at WGCU Public Media, and on Twitter, we're at WGCU using the hashtag GCL. So before we get into talking about the storm surge watch and warning system, Jamie Rome from the National Hurricane Center, I wanted to ask you for a sneak preview. What is the outlook for the 2017 hurricane season?
Well, the outlook doesn't provide any sort of information about what will or won't happen this year. We're looking at basically a repeat of last year in terms of overall activity across the entire Atlantic and Caribbean basin. But the more important thing is that, you know, you could have in a hypothetical situation, you could have one and only one hurricane the entire season. If that hurricane hit your neighborhood, it would be a busy season. So we really need to not focus on these seasonal forecasts and focus more on being prepared.
Yeah, that's a really good point. And part of being prepared now this year is going to be the storm surge and watch warning system. That's new to the public. Can you tell me a little about that?
So what we've done is gone back in time and looked at how most people are losing their life in hurricanes. And contrary to popular belief, it's not wind. It's not wind that is resulting in the largest loss of life. It's drowning, in most cases, from salt water due to storm surge. And yet we didn't have a way to sort of elevate that threat or directly warn on that threat in the past. So starting this hurricane season, for the first time ever, the United States National Weather Service will have the ability to directly warn on storm surge, and this will be a huge, huge upgrade in our overall warning systems.
And also about awareness. So how did you come up with a predictive model for storm surge? Have you always had that ability to predict?
We've always had it. Obviously, this new warning capability put more pressure on improving the forecasting and modeling aspects. And so we've been pushing hard to upgrade the modeling system over the last 7 or 8 years. And so now we have a system that we think is able to provide the accuracy and precision we need to execute this new warning.
So what kind of factors influence how much of a storm surge a hurricane is going to produce?
It's actually quite challenging, more challenging than I thought when I signed up for this job. But you've got to get the hurricane right. So that's number one. So you got to predict where the hurricane is going, its size, its strength, its forward speed, these sorts of things. But then on top of that, you've got to know the shape of the coastline. You got to know how quickly the shoreline drops off or the water gets deep offshore. You've got to know the land, how high the land is. And we all know that the land varies, dramatically. So you've got to have really high resolution land height information. And so when you factor all that in, you really have to have a big supercomputer to crunch through all of that information. And thankfully, NOAA has upgraded its supercomputing over the last several years, which has enabled us to do this.
I think that's really intriguing. And then when you talk about the lay of the land, we're down here in Southwest Florida where there are no hills. So what is a better place to be? Do you want to be in the flatlands where the water can just kind of stream on through and maybe be shallower? Or is it more difficult when you have hills and valleys for the water to get deeper into?
Well, so I mean, this is going to be a good segue to talking about Gerald and his expertise. So what we do here in the U.S. is we pre-map the risk before a hurricane ever forms, before hurricane season ever arrives. So the National Hurricane Center provides folks and for emergency management these risk data sets and these risk maps That then goes into building evacuation zones, and they're usually lettered or numbered. So in Florida, it would be like zone A, B, C, D. And then if you determine if you're in one of those zones, you know you're potentially vulnerable to storm surge. And you know that if a hurricane comes, that you might have to evacuate. So that's the best way to sort of ascertain if you're even at risk of storm surge, number one. And if the answer is yes, if you are in one of these zones, then you have to start planning where you would go. Where, you know, do you have a relative in Orlando? Do you have to go to Georgia? You know, where would you go to escape the water if a hurricane came?
Yeah, and Gerald Campbell, as the emergency manager here at FGCU campus, a while back you did an emergency preparedness walkthrough here at the station here on FGCU campus. And in some instances, you said that it's possible for water to come all the way inland to where we are right now, past I-75. When you tell people that, are they just shocked?
Oh, they are absolutely shocked, but it's absolutely true that in exactly the right set of circumstances that a hurricane that approaches the shoreline from the right angle could push salt water very far inland in Lee County, and that includes the across I-75 and the FGCU campus as well as much farther inland than most people realize. It's just hard to imagine that we're that low and we're that flat, but we are.
Do you find people just absolutely floored? I mean, why do you think people don't really perceive the threat of water?
I think there are a couple of reasons, but people are – they just – it's really hard to picture. They tend to think that we are miles from the beach because we tend to think horizontally, whereas in the real world, vertically, we're only a few feet above sea level. So in the case of a hurricane coming on shore, it actually tends to bring the water to us, and people just don't realize how low we actually are. It's very difficult for them to comprehend when they never see the water any other time unless they go to the beach. It's a real challenge.
So being as flat as we are down here in Southwest Florida, does that will make it easier for the water to get further inland, like you're saying, but without some of those hills and valleys, is it a little bit maybe less possible for it to get super deep?
Jamie can answer that better than I can, but no, it's very easy for the water to continue to get deep. If you think about it, there's nothing to act as breaks or levees or other ways to channel the water away. So it's a broad, flat plain of water that just comes incredibly far inland.
And Jamie Rome with the National Hurricane Center, why is a storm surge such a deadly force?
Well, first and foremost, people don't understand it, so they tend not to evacuate when asked to do so, and so they tend to stay in their home thinking they're okay, because most of the time we interview these people, they say, well, I was here during storm so-and-so 5 years ago, and I was fine, and then in this new storm, for whatever reason, puts water in their community where the previous one didn't. And water is surprisingly more dangerous than people realize. For example, if you had 2 feet of water in a community, that doesn't sound like much. You feel like, oh, I could wade through it. I could go upstairs. But if you have a heart attack and you call 911 and the emergency response personnel can't get to you because the roads are flooded, suddenly that 2 feet of water becomes incredibly life-threatening. Or if you have downed power lines that are laying in this, just even a foot of water, and you happen to touch it or move into that water or encounter that water, you could get electrocuted. So water is surprisingly deceptive in its ability to harm you, and I just don't think people really understand that aspect of it.
Is there also a corrosive element with salt water getting touching on your electricity in your house? Does that pose a problem too?
Well, it's an aspect of it. That's getting a bit granular in a sense. I think what's more important is that water and electricity usually don't go well together at all. And if you have electricity in and around, in the down power line could be down the street and you just can't even see it. You may not even know that it's a down power line. And then it becomes really quite sad. So what you see in some cases is, let's say a child is playing and touches the water, and obviously they become immobile. Then the parent runs in to try to help the child, and then that person becomes impacted by the same phenomenon, and somebody else will run in to help the parent. And you could see how it's very easy for what just looks like, innocent ponding of water to become quite deadly.
And Gerald, Jamie touched on a subject that I think is the case a lot of the time here in Southwest Florida. People look back at past hurricanes and they do a comparison. How do you find that to be dangerous when people are looking, oh, well, back I made it through Charlie and everything was fine?
I think that could be one of the most dangerous things in a hurricane, because no hurricane is exactly like the other. And so very few people actually experience the eyewall of a major hurricane that we don't have the expertise that we think we have. In our area, we hear people all the time who talk, I survived Charlie. Charlie was a very isolated event. And if in a place like the FGCU campus, we experienced very little effect from that storm other than some windy conditions. Others just don't understand that that's a matter of luck, not good planning on their part. It's just luck that the hurricane was the right size and the right shape and the right speed and hit the coastline at the right area, that we were spared and other people caught the brunt of the storm.
Yeah. And you've been working in emergency services for a while. Have you ever experienced a hurricane that had a storm surge? Have you ever been around during one of those?
In my time as an emergency manager for the county, I saw any number of storm surge issues. Not all of them were the 20-foot killer surges that we associate with some, although I have seen that. I've experienced in my personal life with Hurricane Hugo in Charleston in 1989, the power that surge can do. So, yes, I've had the unfortunate experience of seeing firsthand and through my job the impact that surge can have and the way that it changes lives for people who will never be the same.
But during Hugo in 89, you evacuated.
Absolutely.
What happened to your home?
My home was blown down by 145-mile-an-hour winds, and the wreckage was ripped off the foundation by about 20 feet of salt water that came across the property. It floated the wreckage of my house about 500 yards off the lot.
So the water just picked your house up and moved it?
Just tore it away.
Yeah. So thinking that an individual human being is going to be able to withstand that doesn't really make a whole lot of sense. We are talking about a new storm surge watch and warning system that's debuting this year for the 2017 hurricane season. If you have a question or a comment, give us a call at 877-428-8255. That's 877-GCU-TALK. So, Jamie Rome with the National Hurricane Center, formulating this seasonal outlook, is it possible at all? You kind of mentioned earlier at the beginning of the show that you don't really feel like there should be a lot of focus on the seasonal outlook, but do those seasonal outlooks ever – are they ever able to predict anything in the way of storm surge, or is that only hurricane to hurricane?
No, it's only predicting the average or the cumulative activity across the Atlantic basin. So it's predicting total number of storms, say 10, 15, 20, what have you, across the entire Atlantic and Caribbean. It doesn't say anything about whether those storms will hit land and where they will hit land. And you have to know where a storm is going to go to predict storm surge. Storm surge is very much like real estate, location, location, location. So if you don't know where a storm is going to go, you can't predict the storm surge.
So tell me a little bit more about this particular watch and warning system. I'm from the Midwest, so I'm familiar with tornado watch and warning. A watch is when conditions are favorable for a tornado, and warnings when one's been spotted. What does a watch and warning mean for storm surge?
So the difference is actually a really good question. The difference between this warning system and what you're talking about for tornadoes, a tornado is what's called a short fused warning, and this will be what's called a long fused warning. So in a case of a tornado, the tornado forms, and our ability to warn and you to take action is typically on the scale of minutes or seconds. In the case of a hurricane, we can see it forming and coming across the Atlantic, and we can typically give several days' notice, which is good because evacuations, especially in the western part of Florida, often take several days. It takes a long time for people to pack up, get in the car, you know, get on the roads. The roads are congested, and so on and so forth. So the primary difference in the watch warning for storm surge is a longer lead time. So you would issue a warning not when a tornado is spotted, because that's imminent, like right now, but you issue it based off your certainty that life-threatening conditions could occur. So a watch is a longer lead time, 48 hours, less certainty. A warning is 36 hours and then greater certainty.
Okay. So the time window there is 48 and 36?
Correct.
Okay. So the watch and warning, does it indicate the height? I mean, so when these warnings come out, is it a potential for a 3-foot storm surge, or are you giving that kind of information with these warnings?
So the warning and watch is designed to identify life-threatening conditions, and so we're going to set the criteria at 3 feet, and that's 3 feet above ground. So if you're standing on ground, it'd be up to about your hip. So that's not 3 feet above mean sea level or 3 feet above tide. It's, you know, 3 feet above ground. And then we have another product that sort of goes along with it that provides the depth ranges. So, for example, if we think the water is going to get even higher than 6 feet, it would get a warning, and then there would be another product that would say how much deeper or how much higher than 3 feet.
All right. So, and then following the correlation with the tornado watch warning, watch, you keep an eye out, warning, you seek shelter. At what point do you need to initiate your evacuation? Is it, if there's a watch, should you evacuate, or do you wait for the warning?
So evacuation orders are done by emergency managers, so Gerald can speak to that part. I will say this, when we issue a warning, we will have the ability to make cell phones go off, to trigger cell phones. If you are in that warning, if you get that alert, and you haven't taken the time to evaluate whether or not you've been asked to evacuate, you should do that. Or if you have been asked to evacuate or told to evacuate and you haven't executed upon those orders, that cell phone alert is a strong, strong indication that you should probably follow those orders.
Yeah, and Gerald Campbell, what would be your advice if there's a watch or a warning?
My advice is always to listen to your local emergency managers. No emergency manager wants to order an evacuation, so the only reason that they will do that is because people's lives are in danger. Evacuations come with their own inherent set of risk. People die during evacuations all the time, so that when an emergency manager issues that evacuation order, they've done the mental math and they know that it's more dangerous for you to stay than it is for you to go. So my advice is always listen to that local emergency manager. When they tell you it's time to evacuate, it's time to evacuate.
But as a matter of like a personal decision, maybe starting to make some plans, at the time of a watch, would you advise someone, okay, start packing your stuff and get ready?
A lot of it depends on the area that you're in, but in Southwest Florida, we live in one of the most difficult places to evacuate in the nation.
Yeah, because the traffic's terrible.
It's terrible on a good day, and it's really terrible during an evacuation when everybody tries to leave at once. So my advice to people is, if you don't have a reason to be here and you've watched the storm, and when a storm gets close around here, it's all hurricane all the time on the news, when you see that build up, you don't have a reason to stay. If you can, leave early. You have more choices and places to evacuate. Traffic's lighter, easier to buy gas, easier to get food, all of those things. So leave early if you can. But if you can't leave early, by all means, leave when your emergency manager tells you to leave.
Yeah, and have a plan in action. So if somebody doesn't listen and they stay, what is a person's best course of action if they are stuck in their house and a storm surge comes through?
They've missed their best course of action by that point. They should have left. But if they do stay, then all that they can do is try to get to the highest areas that they can get to, because one of the problems that they are going to face is that we've become so used to dialing 911 and having help come bail us out of anything that went wrong, including our own bad decisions, that I think in the back of people's minds they think that I'll call 911 and they will save me. And the truth of the matter is that there comes a point in every evacuation where 911 services shut down. And then people are literally on their own until the storm passes, until the weather clears enough that emergency crews can get out and start to do those rescues. Emergency responders are great. They want to be out as soon as they can, but we can't risk their safety to go out and potentially recover bodies at that point.
And especially with electrified water.
Well, there are any number of hazards, and that just being one of them. Just leave when you see that evacuation. You don't need any hurricane street cred for saying, I survived a storm. If you survive a major storm, you were lucky, you weren't smart.
Yeah,
you got to think about it more deeply, too. If you don't leave and your neighbor sees you not leaving and they decide not to leave, now you've imperiled their life, too. And so, you know, you have to think of it as a community and civic responsibility to get out when ordered to do so.
That's kind of leading by example.
Correct.
I want to switch gears here a little bit, Jamie Roman, ask a little bit about something that's been on people's mind lately. Is the rising sea level having any kind of impact on storm surge?
Oh, absolutely. Not to the effect that, you know, it's slow. Sea level rise tends to be quite slow relative to storm surge. But you don't need me to tell you, if you have a higher base upon which a future storm surge to ride upon, you know, you're going to get bigger impacts. But we're talking about it takes years and decades for those changes to manifest themselves or to reach the impacts that you're probably thinking you're visualizing.
Does it impact the frequency or regularity of hurricanes, global warming?
There's still much debate about that scientifically. You can find people on both sides of that debate. I'm not one of them because I focus on the storm surge. What I will say is, regardless of the frequency of the hurricanes, the science is pretty much a slam dunk that if you go forward far enough in time, so, you know, 20, 30, 40 years, future hurricanes will have a greater impact because the sea level rise will enhance storm surge.
Mm-hmm. And I've been told that weather extremes like drought and excessive rain are more frequent as global warming increases the temperatures of Earth. But when it comes to excessive rain, there's the danger of flash flooding. Can you describe to me a little bit about how the water in a flash flood would differ from how water in a storm surge behaves, or do they kind of act the same?
Well, they can be superimposed on each other, which is really, really, really the worst situation. So what happens in a hurricane? It rains. The water flows into the river, and the river tries to flow into the ocean, where if you have storm surge at the same time, you basically block the mouth of the river, so gravity is no longer able to take that water out into the sea, and you start to back up the river, or in worst cases, the surge goes up the river and combines with the flash flooding that's occurring from the rainfall. And so you can really get these local enhancements, and the water can rise quite quickly in these types of situations. On the scale of minutes to an hour or two, the water can come up, you know, several feet. And this is where the inland aspect that Gerald was talking about earlier, that people tend to think about, you know, I'm 10 miles from the ocean versus I'm 2 feet vertically above sea level. Folks up rivers really, really, really get misled in thinking they have less vulnerability than they actually do. If you're in southwest Florida near a river or intracoastal waterway or anything that has access to the ocean, even if it requires a 5-hour boat ride, you probably have a storm surge risk, and you don't know it.
And those storm surge risk maps, are those something that's available that people can look up and see where their house is and how big the risk situation is?
Certainly. The evacuation zones, Florida is one of the best states at promoting evacuation zones. They make the evacuation zones easily accessible. Gerald speak to the best way to get to them. They're usually available by the state and by the counties. You would generally talk to your county emergency manager. A lot of counties have apps that you could use to get out. I think Lee County has an app where you can use to look up whether or not you're in an evacuation zone. That's the best way to assess your risk. Now, the letters go up, so you have A, B, C, and D. If you're in Zone A, you're really vulnerable, and you absolutely must have a plan. That's not to say that letters B, C, and D are off the hook, but, you know, first and foremost, if you're in letter A, evacuation zone, you're really, really, really vulnerable, and you absolutely have to take this seriously.
Yeah, and he was mentioning that there are things available for people to take a look at the map of where they are. Where would people look here in southwest Florida?
It's easy to find at your local emergency management agency's website. In Lee County, it's leeoc.com. Collier, Charlotte, others have similar websites. They have, in many cases, a Know Your Zone, which will tell you the evacuation zone that your property is in based on its street address. There are apps that are out there. So there are a number of ways, but Jamie's absolutely right. It's critical that you know the evacuation zone that you live in.
But I imagine your homeowner's insurance agent would probably know your zone. Because that's,
that's actually a misnomer.
They don't?
No.
I would think they would base your rate on that.
No, so your rates, so this is a good question. So let me, give me 1 second to dive into this one. Your insurance rates are based off flood insurance rate maps or what's called a 100-year event, meaning an event that, climatologically speaking, would only happen once every 100 years. Your evacuation zones are based off a more thorough or a more comprehensive risk analysis, or what you, in everyday language, worst-case scenarios. Now, if we did evacuation rates based off worst-case scenarios, nobody in the country could afford insurance. Nobody could live at the ocean. And if we evacuate it based off 100-year flood maps, like what goes into your flood insurance rates, we would routinely under-evacuate because a 150-year storm or a 200-year storm or a 300-year storm would come along and blow right past the flood insurance rate maps. So it's important for people to distinguish between their flood insurance rate maps and their evacuation zones. And just because you're not in a flood insurance rate map, that's just the regulatory aspect of it, doesn't mean you shouldn't have flood insurance. So what happens when people buy a house is the realtor will typically say, you're not in a flood-prone area, and then the individual will not buy flood insurance. And so we kind of got to break that cycle. The just because you're not mandated or required to buy flood insurance doesn't mean that you shouldn't buy flood insurance.
Just because you don't have to doesn't mean it's not possibly ever going to happen, is what you're saying.
Correct, and it's typically cheap too, relatively speaking, and covers a whole host of things that your traditional homeowner's insurance will not cover. So that's typically what gets people in trouble in these storms, is their house gets flooded. They have homeowner's insurance, which they think covers them. If they're flooded and they don't have flood insurance, it is possible that their home insurance does not cover them.
Okay, and so one last question before we wrap up. I wanted to ask you, where do people look to find these watches and warnings if there's going to be a storm surge watch or warning? Is that going to go out through, like, news stations? Your local meteorologist is going to get that and put it on the map? Or where do they find that information?
So we're going to use all of those mediums to disseminate, but we're going to take it one step further. In the case of a warning, not a watch, in the case of a warning, we have the ability now to push it to your cell phones, similar to like an Amber Alert.
All right. And then a last question for Gerald Campbell. I wanted to ask you, now is the time when everybody's getting their hurricane preparedness together. What kind of things do people need to get in order to make themselves prepared for hurricane season?
Everybody needs a hurricane preparedness kit. We need food that doesn't require refrigeration. We need water, medicines. And beyond that, the specific parts of the hurricane kit depend on the individual. If you have pets, you have to plan for them. If you have small children, you have to plan for them. The bottom line is to start now while the weather is good and build that kit while you can, buy a little bit at a time so it doesn't cost a ton of money to do it at one time, and then build a kit that's for you. But remember to carry some cash, make sure you have food, make sure you have water, make sure you have medications and all the other special things that you may need. If you're a special needs person, you need oxygen, other things like that. Explore the options that are available for you and your community as well, because there are a lot of options that are out there that your local emergency managers work very hard to make available to the public.
Yeah. And maybe keep that in the corner of a closet somewhere instead of the garage so it doesn't just cook.
Oh, absolutely. Yeah. It needs to stay inside where you would keep your normal things that you
keep
would use.
Normal things that you don't want to sit out and get super hot because we're going into the hot season. Well, we're going to have to leave it there. I want to thank our guest, Jamie Rome with the National Hurricane Center. Thanks for taking the time to talk with us and sharing us the just released seasonal outlook and information about the storm surge watch and warning system. I really appreciate your time.
No, thank you for having us.
Also, thank you to Gerald Campbell, Emergency Manager with FGCU. Thank you for your insights.
Thank you. I appreciate it.
Coming up, when it comes to child welfare, Florida ranks near the back of the pack for things like education. By some measures, like health care, the state ranks near the bottom. Coming up, we'll take a look at how lawmakers address those issues in this year's legislative session and where Florida kids stand today. I'm Julie Glenn, and this is Gulf Coast Live. Stay with us.